You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Natasha Ria Alskari. She's talking to me from Kansas City, Missouri. Natasha, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Natasha, we talked once before, of course, and we talked about a number of things regarding your work as well as your curatorial projects and other things. But today we're talking about the book that came out last October. Can you tell me a little bit about that book?
Yeah, most definitely. And I'm always excited about all the other things I have. But returning to writing is definitely my first love. And it really is what sparked all the other creative projects that I've done over my life. But this is my first nonfiction book, and it is called Mama Sutra, Love and Lovemaking Advice to My Son. My son is about to be 21, and last year when I called him on his 20th birthday, we always talk at midnight and just chat about all the things we normally talk about, but wishing him a happy birthday. And we got into this discussion like a little deeper discussion about like college and dating, sex, sexuality, all those things. And, you know, we just had a really raw and funny conversation like we always do. But I think it felt a little different because he was 20, like he got it in a way that, you know, he didn't before. And he just said, Mom, I'm so sure that all of the men that I go to school with do not have these conversations with their mothers. And it shows. It shows in their behavior and it shows in all of our conversations. And he's like, I really think you should write a book. And I think you should call it Mama Sutra. And he was like, you can thank me later. And so that really prompted me to stop another writing project that I've been working on for a considerable time to pursue this book. I had that feeling inside of me that just really said, hey, you should write this book. And so when he came home, for a brief break, we sat down at a coffee shop and just kind of started sketching out the book and, you know, remembering all the conversations we had. And he was like, don't forget to mention this and mention this. And then I just spent the summer writing the book. And I've really, you know, enjoyed, I've felt very passionate about the subject. I've always wanted to write about it, but I just never, it never seemed like the right time. And so it just felt like the right time when I said it. And it's been a really interesting just journey, you know, getting the book out there, discussing the book, and helping families, really couples, individuals, and young adults and even teenagers, of course, with parental consent, you know, talk about what it means to show up in the world as a lover.
So let's talk more about that. I'm so glad we're talking about this book. Last time it was, it was just a notion. So, so there's the relationship, of course, you have with your son, which is very special. It seems that there's something very open there and that you can have these conversations. But since you've written a book and now you're talking to families about it, that's a different conversation, right? I mean, sexuality and talking about how to approach it is not something even in 2020 we hear a lot about. So I'd like to talk about how you approach that when you're getting this book out into the world. And again, we're talking about Mama Sutra, which is Love and Lovemaking Advice to My Son. There's a link to it also in this interview if people want to buy it. But tell me a little bit about the conversations, how you get that out into the world, because this is such an important conversation that people can, of course, buy this book. But how do you present it, and what's the kind of feeling that you get from, not feeling, but the kind of feedback or conversation that it generates?
You know, it's been varied. You have to remember I'm in the middle of the country, so it's probably really conservative. And to some degree, but I do believe that this book was a coming out for my family. I sat down and talked with my daughter, you know, who is 16, and she did not want to participate in the book at all, and rightfully so, she's 16, right? But I knew that it would get a lot of attention locally, and I just said, are you ready for that? And And she said yes. She gave her blessing, which was really the biggest thing for me, because what happens when you do come out as a family that is sex positive, I mean, people know very clearly that I am a Black feminist. They know that. That's a very well-known thing. But as far as these conversations that I've had extensively with my children around sex and sexuality their entire lives, I do think that we were kind of closeted about that and protected that part of our lives because we didn't want to maybe see the judgment that came from that. And this is not something that was necessarily conscious. But it was because my son felt so passionate about what he was seeing, you know, at college, he was like, I didn't know men thought like this. Because when you are a feminist, you are pretty much raising your children in a bubble. You typically are hanging out with people who are like-minded, both men and women. And so he didn't grow up, you know, in a very, you know, personal sense, seeing women's oppression and seeing suppression of women. You know, he saw men that were with feminist women and outspoken women, and so that was what he thought that life was. And when he got to school and learned that the date rape culture is real, you know, all those things, I mean, you see them on the news, but he was like, wow, these are real people who think like this. And so it was really the urging. And then when he would talk with his friends, he would say, do you really believe that? Or not even just his friends, but just men in general. He's like, do you really believe that? And one time he called me his freshman year and he was like, why did you make me a feminist? You know, he was just like, I had no idea that it was like this, because clearly he as a man is privy to information that, you know, I don't really get. I don't get the locker room talk. You know, I don't get that. I'm not present for that. And so what he heard just heavily impacted him. And I think because I've always been so passionate and open about the power of love and lovemaking, I knew that I wanted to create that for the world. Like I speak with a lot of people, and a lot of people come to me about issues with sex and sexuality, and particularly African-Americans, where you have this really big overarching traditional Black Christianity, and I would even just say any religion that African-Americans are tied to in this country typically have a large dose of sexual oppression attached to them. And so that was one of the very big reasons why I didn't, you know, raise my children in a church, was because I wanted them to be able to live a life without guilt and shame and enjoy their bodies and their sexuality. So the approach that
I'm sorry, but let me ask you a little bit more about that, because this is your approach, but also to highlight, you know, you talk about longstanding taboos within the African-American community, and I want to ask you specifically about that, because just as this is advice to your son, and, you know, Ta-Nehisi Coates' book, Between the World and Me, was to his son, and, you know, before that, I think James Baldwin, Fire Next Time, was to his son. You know, that mm-hmm. was, of course, also about being a Black body in a yes. white world. So this does seem like it could reach, you know, beyond that, but perhaps not. So I want to start with, why is this specific to the Black body and myths or taboos therein?
Right. Well, the reason it's specific to a Black body, obviously, is because I'm a Black mother, and I'm a Black mother in the United States of America raising a hetero Black son. And there is so much politicizing of the Black body, both male and female. And to teach your child how to be in their body as a free spirit, as a free human being, it does take 18 years of work. It absolutely does, because everywhere you turn, you're kind of taught to not do these things, right? And to not be in your body and not to enjoy your life and that your body is a weapon to be used against you. And so, you know, when my mom read the book, she said to me, yes, this book is written by a Black mother to a Black son. And she said, but Mom, she said, but this, as your mother, I can say this is a book for lovers. I feel like it's just about learning to be a lover. But there are specific things in it that are to Black male masculinity, which I think seriously has to be addressed in the African-American community. And, I mean, as a woman, I have personally experienced these things, and I have seen the impact that it's had on other African-American women, the kind of old thinking and ways about sex and sexuality. And I want to say that, of course, this is not everyone, but these are definitely issues that are deeply rooted in the patriarchy, deeply rooted in a religious, you know, heavily religious background. And that is that, you know, you can definitely enjoy sex, but only when you're married. And then, so you're supposed to go all of this time never knowing anything about sex, and then you're supposed to turn into this magical sexual being because you said, I do. And my friends who grew up in religious backgrounds said that was the greatest challenge for them to learn how to turn that on and off, or if they didn't get married. So what does that mean for them? If I'm not married, do I not get to enjoy these things? That doesn't maybe sound like a lot to some people to have to break free from, but it is very huge, because if you've been taught your whole life that your body is a sin and it's made, and temptation and pleasure is a sin, and then you're supposed to then not only be able to experience pleasure yourself, but also to create pleasure in another person, it is really revolutionary to say, hey, I've got a book here for you that is going to kind of help you break all that up and have integrity about your lovemaking, have the proper preparation for your lovemaking, and for you to live a life in a relationship that makes sense to you. So, it, you know, I have had more women buy the book than I have had men. So I think it's important to note that there are many wives who are buying the books for their sons. But then after they read it, they've come back to me or emailed me and said, I made my husband read this book too. So a lot of women have said to me, I realized I was trapped in a lot of these old ways of thinking. You know, I had several people who nanny for families also reach out to me. So that was really interesting, where you had the people who weren't, these weren't even boys in their family. But I've had a lot of the aunties, which in African-American culture, you know, aunts have a huge responsibility to kind of pick up the role that the mother and father aren't comfortable with. And oftentimes that is about sex. So it's not unusual within our community that the aunts and the uncles are the ones that give the talk, right? And so I've had a lot of women reach out to me that's like, I'm getting this for my nephew, I'm getting this for my little cousin. So that where they're in that role where they're an adult, but they're not the age of the parents. And that's not unusual within our community to do that. So,
I love that. And tell me a little bit more about also, you know, I guess the approach here, because it's at once a, you know, Emmanuel, the son could read it, the aunt could read it, but it's also, as you said, from a Black feminist perspective. So how, you know, and this may be an odd question, but if this book wasn't written by a Black feminist, but let's say a Black mother who didn't label herself a feminist, what's the difference in your tone or information or wisdom as specifically a Black feminist?
Right. Well, I think two things to note. One is that I've always said every single Black woman in America is a feminist, because you cannot have the intersection of race and gender and the oppression that you face in both those groups, and for Black women to be as amazing and powerful and beautiful and strong as they are. They may not call themselves feminists because of the connotation of the word, but every Black woman I know is a feminist. It doesn't matter her personality. It doesn't matter her stature. It doesn't matter any of those things. The way that African-American female culture navigates is really powerful in that sense. So I think that what makes it different as a feminist is teaching men how important it is our sons to really honor a woman's body and every woman's body, right? So it's not like, this is a virtuous woman, so this is how you treat her. No, it's any woman that you come in contact with and that you all consensually make the decision to be sexual with each other, they deserve to have this treatment. So I think as a feminist, the way it looks different is that I am equalizing women. these women are not to be treated a certain way based on their class, their educational status, where they went to, either whether they went to public or private school, all these things that even within the broader culture, in white culture, in American culture, we diminish women based on those things, right? This girl is from a good family. So, you know, all those types of things that happen, and I'm saying erase all that. We are all here to have these amazing experiences that we can provide for each other. I think a big difference, too, is that it removes shame and guilt. I try to be conscious, even though, you know, I'm talking as a straight woman to my straight son, I am conscious and aware of the language, and it is a very honest conversation. You know, African-American women love their children deeply. They particularly love their sons in single-parent households. It's a unique relationship often that a lot of people don't understand and get. And so the level of love that I'm sharing, it is not a clinical book. It is an across-the-kitchen-table type of expression. You know, I really tried to, you know, what capture my own voice like I do in my poetry, or, you know, if I'm speaking through another character, I really try to capture the essence of that and to capture the essence of the conversations. The thing about it is that men struggle with hearing things about their deficiencies or their challenges within the bedroom from the women that they're sleeping with. But they will always return to their mother or mother figures and ask those questions. And so it really becomes less intimidating for men to hear this advice from a woman they will never have a sexual relationship with, but one who they know deeply loves them and is always looking out for them. That is the role of mother in our community, is that you can be told off, but you know that that person loves you, right? You know that that person has your back. So your mother's not going to blow smoke. You know, your mother is not going to lie to you. She's going to tell you, hey, don't do that. and so I really try to capture that essence, because I think it's easier for men to accept the information, you know, which is like the book is split up into four sections. So the first section is called Liberation, and it really is about decolonizing how we make love and how we look at lovemaking and getting rid of this idea of the patriarchal mother, which is your mother is a sexual being. Your mother herself understands and knows sexuality. And then just the essential knowledge, like understanding birth control, women's birth control, abortion and self-care, and how to prepare your own bedroom and your own space for lovemaking. And then the third section is like the power of technique, and it's called Son, You're an Amazing Lover. But the first part of that section opens up with believing in yourself. Like, believe in yourself that you have the ability to be an amazing lover. Not that you're comparing yourself to, you know, someone on television that has an 8-pack and, you know, zero body fat. It's not about that. It is really about embracing and understanding the power that you have inside of you to be an amazing lover. And so I just talk about even social things, like when how you date a woman and how you touch her and how you gain consent. That is pushed throughout the book, the power of consent and the importance of consent, of suspending judgment about a woman's sexual past or lack of sexual past. And then the fourth section is called A Life of Love, where I talk about navigating relationships, because I'm writing from a Christian perspective, how incredibly important it is to be honest about what you're looking for and having integrity in your word about the kind of relationship that you want. And that may sound really simple, like, oh, well, that's a given, but it really isn't, because you have to give yourself permission to say, hey, I am ready for a monogamous relationship, or for a man to even say, I don't want to have sex until I've met the person I really want to be with. We don't give African-American men, and really a lot of men, permission to say, I would rather wait. We're told in our society that men are always ready to have sex, they always want to have sex, and they don't care who they have sex with. Like, that is information that we're constantly being given, and there are many men who don't feel like that at all. what they feel like they have to in order to meet these societal standards. So, you know, the part of Black feminism that is so important is that it also stands for women and for men, you know, and for children. It's for all of us. It's the liberation of all of those.
And it also sounds like it's for, and just correct me if I'm wrong, but while this is coming from your perspective and has a specific appeal for the African-American community, it seems extends beyond this. This is, I'm white, this is advice it feels like I could use with my son, who's 19 years old.
Absolutely. And I wrote it also with these exercises, which I call contemplations, at the end of every section. And this was a woman's idea that I had spoken with about the book early, but my son even helped me with those because he said, Mom, you know, we want people to pool and discuss the information. They don't have to agree with you, but let it lead into a conversation, which is exactly what I wanted to do. So while you may not be able to, as a white man, sit down with your son and say, hey, I don't know, let's say you haven't really talked to him about sex, or maybe you started when he was 16, which is like way too late, right? But let's say that you can use the book to say, hey, what do you think about this section? Or have you had this experience? Or this is how I felt when I've experienced that. So the book becomes a bit of a bridge between the conversation. So if you want to talk about it personally, you can, or you can talk about it hypothetically. So, you know, I'm starting workshops with families, you know, in people's living rooms, people inviting their intimate friends and families, getting parents together first, getting the kids together separately, and then bringing them back together. Because one, it is often just difficult for people to even talk about sex with their kids. Like, even the older that they get, the stranger that it is. And young people are sometimes curious about their parents. Like, well, what did you do and what were you like? I'm sure you're starting to get those questions now from your son at 19, because if something very magical happens, particularly if your children move away from home, they start to realize, like, wow, my parent isn't such a weirdo. they actually are really interesting, or they raised me well, or, you know, my mom and dad.
Well, sometimes I wonder, honestly, how because my wife's from Spain, and she talks about sex very openly, and when my mm-hmm. son came back from college and was starting to talk a little bit about it, he said, wait, is this normal for kids to talk to their parents about sex?
Yeah.
And we said yes, but of course, it's not normal in the way I grew up, or, you know, mm-hmm. And I think it would poll a lot of parents, it wouldn't seem like such a normal thing to do. It's typically a subject that I would think that's not discussed too much, especially
it's
coming along, what you were doing, or mm-hmm. what's going on. You know, my wife gets kind of involved in what it means to
I love your wife. Woman. That's great, because it's going to make your son a better lover, right? And it's interesting because we did a call to interview 200 men, and only 25 of them responded. So we have interviews from the age of 17 to 70 that are included in the book, 17 to 70 years old, men, all different races, all different orientations, different classes, growing up in different regions of the country and the world. And the two questions was, what did your mother teach you about sex? And what do you wish she would have taught you about sex? And it was like so much, even from as young as 17 to as old as 70, women, mothers, were not discussing sex with their son. And, you know, the premise that I have is that mothers, you know, first of all, most of the time children get their first meals from their mother, right? I mean, you're teaching your children to pray. You're teaching them to behave. You're teaching them manners and how to be a citizen, all these different things. And then when it comes to sex, we often say things like, go ask your dad, when sometimes men don't have the kind of relationship with their dads. And so now this is going to be the first major discussion we have. You know,
all
and
right.
It becomes really awkward that it actually is very natural for the mother to be the teacher in a traditional kind of family about sex. So, you know, and really opposite gender parents, my daughter feels very close to her father, you know, and will probably talk with him more than she talks with me, or just as much. And I remember as a girl really wanting my father's perspective about boys and about, you know, men, and was this the right thing, or is this person treating me right? Should I accept this? I wanted to hear from my father, you know, just like, because he's a man. So just like, and I'm talking about in a heteronormative, you know, type of relationship. But the opposite gender parent is often the person that people confide in for different things, you know. And I'm not saying always. I think both parents should be heavily involved in, you know, conversations about sex and sexuality. But I also want people to understand that happens really early, that it's never too young to teach your children about sex and sexuality. I have a friend who's a doctor, and she said, I started talking to my son, and he was 14, and I said, hey, I'm a doctor. I can talk to you about sex. And so she said, we had the talk. And I said, well, how did it go? And she's like, he didn't say a word. I'm like, well, was that the first time you talked to him about sex? And she's like, yes. So there's the thing. Now, even though you're a doctor, and yeah, you've dealt with sex, now your son, you've never said anything to your son. By the time he's 14, he's already self-pleasured. He's already come across pornography. You know, he's already possibly had several sexual experiences, even if he hasn't had intercourse. And then you want to just kind of come and insert, like, I'm here if you need me. And it doesn't work like that. So Creating conversations about sex and sexuality throughout life really removes the taboo that we have. You know, I remember the first time, you know, when my friends started to get together, and then people were getting pregnant and all those things, and my kids had questions. And they could recognize, because of all of the ways that we talked, when a couple was in love. And I would say things like, oh, they're probably going to go home and make love, you know. And they would go, ooh. Now, they didn't really know what that was, right? But they knew that they felt this energy between these people that they know individually, and then together, that they're like, oh, that's something different happening right there. I just kind of talk about all of those different types of things, and I really am trying to encourage parents early on. And I'm not a sexologist, you know, I'm not a sexual therapist, but I'm a parent, and I've been one for 21 years. And as you know, having been a parent for 19 years, you're probably a specialist at a lot of things when it comes to young people, right? You've been doing it every day for 365 days. You know things, and you've come to understand things. And so I am really teaching from that perspective. Like, hey, we can break these taboos. We can start having conversations with our children. In the state of Missouri, the age to start sex is, the average age is 12. 12. That is wow. The average age in the state of Missouri. Our young people, all they have to do is pick up a phone, and they can have immediate access to not only pornography, but the dark webs of pornography. You know, the kids are so much faster than the technology before you even know what is happening. My children keep me up to date on what's happening sexually on the internet. And I appreciate that, because then I can kind of get ahead of the conversation and say, well, let's talk about that. And, well, what do you think about that? You know, how do you feel about that? And so just coming to understand what all these young people are facing, they are facing sex in a very different way than our generation did as well. You know, it's a lot more virtual. You know, it's a little tricky. It's trickier because of technology. And it can be also very transactional because of the different level of intimacy that we face. You know, so you know, we didn't contend with phones when we were 17, 18, and 19 years old. But now that is a form of dating. And so teaching kids how to navigate that, we didn't have that. I mean, people feel like they have a whole relationship with someone that they've never met before. You know, that's pretty unusual. That's something that's very new.
Well, I want to thank you, Natasha, for writing this book, and hope all the listeners are interested in getting it for their sons themselves. And I want to ask you one more question, which is, what are you reading right now?
I am always rereading my favorite books. I'm so bad about this, but If Beale Street Could Talk, by James Baldwin is just the love story that keeps me encouraged about the power of sustaining love in an oppressive world. And also, I've started reading Zora Neale Hurston's Barracoon, and I am reading The Year of Yes by Shonda Rhimes as well. So that's what's on the nightstand right now.
Natasha, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for writing that wonderful book.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.